Hello and welcome to the Fastest Lab podcast, helping you to stay up to date with the fast-moving world of Formula One. Today, we talk about the crazy Italian Grand Prix. My name is Jan, and as ever, I'm with Fogel. Hello everyone to episode 198 and also the last episode of the Fastest Lab podcast. We started our podcast journey, well, exactly 4 years ago in September 2016 with the Italian GP. And even then, fittingly, the episode was called What an Exciting Race. Same could be said for this year's race in Monza. And yeah, as we both, Fergal and I, want to focus on new projects in our life, we decided to end our podcast with the same race we started it. And you can still follow all the latest F1 news at motorsportweek.com, a website Fergal recently joined as a Formula One journalist. So, well, the 2020 Italian GP was really exciting with a very unexpected winner. And what a weekend for Gasly and also AlphaTauri, an Italian-based team, right?
Yeah, it was just, you know, a fantastic result all round for them. And you know, I think for all people watching as well, it was just one of those races that we'll remember forever, really. It'll be a race that will go down in the history books. You know, with an unexpected winner, an unexpected podium, really. Lots of highs, lots of lows, and just an overall really memorable Grand Prix, which you know reminded us how much we love the sport, because you know races this year haven't been great at times. With a certain team and a certain someone dominating a lot, but I think. It always seems that whenever we get a little bit frustrated and a little bit bored, let's say, there seems to be a race that comes along like this one that just reminds us just how special the sport really is.
Yeah, and it's great that we have those races. I mean, just look back at Hockenheim in 2019, what a crazy race that was. And yeah, it seems like every year somehow there is always that one crazy race that makes the sport, even if there is a team that is dominating or a driver that is dominating, it's not always that certain that driver or team will always win. And that's, I think, also the special thing about the Formula One sport. But highs and lows, as you said, and yeah, let's start with one of the lows after we talked briefly about the high of Pierre Gasly. Of course, Monza, Italian GP, it's the home race of Ferrari. And I think everybody knew that it wouldn't be easy for them with... we saw how much they struggled in the Belgian GP with also a low downforce track. But, yeah, the race... Well, qualifying, yeah, as expected, not great. Vettel not even making it out of Q1 due to... Yeah, so... Again, some interesting tactics from the drivers, and with the minimum lap time rule implemented, it didn't really solve the problem. But in the race, yeah, to have a brake failure for Vettel and also a crash of Leclerc, and that was really a heavy one. Oh, really bad. Bad race, bad season for Ferrari. And it seems like every race there's something even worse coming.
Yeah, I mean... At Monza, you know, where they got so much support. Of course, no support for them this year because of the circumstances. But, they said that... the feeling was after Spa that it couldn't have really got much worse. But, it did. So maybe now it can't really get much worse. I don't really know how it could. But, Yeah, you know, first of all, for
maybe not even finishing the car to start the race or something.
Yeah, maybe. But yeah, for Seb, yeah, I mean, qualifying, they didn't learn their lesson from last year. That was apparent to me that was going to happen after it happened in F3, because we saw it happen in F3 last year, where like 17 drivers or something got penalties. And this time around, like 9 drivers got penalties or something like that. So, yeah, I mean, this time all the crazy stuff really happened in Q1. After that, it sorted itself out a bit. But yeah, for Vettel in the race, I mean, a brake failure at Monza, that's pretty scary stuff. And, you know, the big failure happened into turn one, which is probably the best corner on the entire circuit. It could have happened to him because... you know, there's runoff there with where he can go through and get to a slow speed. I mean, if that had happened at the Parabolica, I mean, that would have been an absolutely massive crash. And we did see an absolute massive crash there for Leclerc. You know, one of the biggest crashes I've seen in a while in F1. And
have you actually seen the left-hand side of the car when it was on the track?
Yeah, it was badly beaten up.
Scary.
Yeah, I mean... Well, when the crash actually happened, the camera, you know, cut to it very suddenly, and you just saw it, you know, just smash into the barrier at really high speed, and it was, yeah, quite scary. There was a couple of seconds where I thought, you know, he could actually be quite hurt, but then, yeah, the radio came through pretty quickly, and it was apparent that he was okay. So, yeah, great to see that he was able to walk away from that. I'm sure he was a little bruised. But yeah, he's all cleared to race at Mugello. So I guess from that end, it's good. But yeah, not much else. Not much good news other than that coming out of Ferrari.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, the race was hugely dominated by influenced by two moments. One of that moment was the Leclerc crash that brought out the red flag and also meant that those cars that hadn't stopped until that moment were able to fit new tires. Actually, what is your opinion on that rule? Because we heard Lando Norris saying, well, he doesn't like the rule that you can't change tires under the red flag. What do you think about it?
It's a bit of a strange one. I mean, I think, because of course we had the standing start then after that, which was also really, really strange to have another start midway through the race. But, you know, I struggle to imagine, you know, how safe it would have been for Stroll to take that start on 26, 27, whatever, old lap tires. You know, so the safety element of it, I think, you know, that needs to be the priority. But then you could also say... Well, maybe that doesn't count as his one, you know, mandatory pit stop during the race. So, yeah, maybe something needs to be looked into there. But at the same time, I think a situation like this is extremely rare. Red flags like that, and yeah, I mean, I it's not too much of a big deal, I don't think. When safety is the number one priority, of course. And I can see why Norris was frustrated with that because, I mean, he would have got a podium, a second podium for himself if that had happened. So, yeah, I mean, I can see his side of it, but at the same time, it was right for him to be able to change tyres from the safety point of view. But if they want to look into that going forward about forcing them to make another pit stop so they actually come through the pit lane, who knows? But like I said, this type of situation is just incredibly rare. So
yeah, and I mean, one option could be that they can change tires, but only for the same type of compound. So maybe that would force them into another stop. But on the other hand, I mean, as it is currently, you can basically change one or change the races of those impacted driver to the positive if you are not allowed to change tires, for example, and still be on your 25-year-old lap-old tire. I mean, you could also ruin someone's race completely if he had to pit like 3 laps later or something. He would be last and no way to get through the field again. So I think it's better to have it this way than ruin someone's race completely.
I was going to add to that as well. He almost did ruin someone's race at the Stroll at the start, at the second restart when he locked up into turn four. So, you know, obviously grip at that point is going to be low anyway. So, I mean, that could have been so much worse if he had, you know, that little amount of grip on old tires. So from that point of view, it is the correct decision to allow them to change tires. Yes.
Yeah, absolutely. And yeah, in terms of the winner, the even more impactful event of the race was the retirement of Kevin Magnussen. And well, firstly, I was surprised when he slowed down and basically stopped just in front of the pit lane entry, where I thought, like, couldn't he have just driven like 10 meters or 50 meters more and then be in the pit lane? But I don't know whether the problem was so terminal that he wasn't even able to continue with the car. But yeah, then the marshals were not able to recover the car behind the barriers at that point, so they needed to put it back into the pit lane and close the pit entry. And it seems like every team realized that the pit entry was closed apart from Mercedes and Alfa Romeo, I guess.
Yeah, well, I suppose they were the first ones coming around to it, so they were the first reacting to that. I mean, Toto Wolff said that the notification came up on their screens on like the fourth page of the FIA communication board, which is a bit, and you know, no one is looking at that, so that's a bit strange to me, because notifying them that the pit lane is closed, you know, that's probably one of the most important decisions that they could have done. And I think the signage as well with the display panels was a bit, you know, maybe something needs to be added there, because the panels were on the outside. There was no panels, you know, on the side of the actual pit lane itself to warn Hamilton. So he didn't know the pit lane was closed. Mercedes knew it was closed, but Hamilton was basically at the pit line, pit entry line at that point, so he couldn't, turn back out. So, a really unfortunate error there for Mercedes that ultimately cost them the race win, basically, with Hamilton and Giovinazzi, of course, picking up a 10-second stop-and-go penalty, which is, I mean, as far as penalties go, apart from disqualifications, that's the harshest penalty that you can receive, because it's basically a 30-second minimum time penalty. So, yeah, a tough one for them to take, but I guess for us at the... I mean, look, we all know Hamilton's going to win this title this year. It's not over till it's over, of course, but, you know, I don't see anything stopping him. So, you know, it's nice once in a while to see the order mixed up like that and see a big curveball thrown at him and Mercedes. And for us, it gave us a very exciting spectacle at the front of the grid.
Yeah, absolutely. It was such an unexpected podium, and I was so happy for Pierre Gasly after all he has been through in the last couple of months and years. I was so happy for him, and it was great to see that podium. Everyone on the podium, Sainz, Gasly, and also Stroll, everyone was happy, and they celebrated on the podium. Sadly, not with that many spectators beneath them, but it was so great to see, and also to see the AlphaTauri team. And they actually won the race like 12 years ago. Yeah, 2008 with Sebastian Vettel already. And it's really a race that created a lot of positive memories, a lot of happy moments, I guess. And I think maybe it's also acceptable for Mercedes to have won off race, although you probably think they are already in the analysis of why this happened and how they can prevent that for future races.
Yeah, I mean, it wasn't quite Germany 2019 bad. But yeah, I mean, they still scored a chunk of points between both drivers. So,
although you have to say that start from Bottas, that was really, really bad, and I couldn't explain why. I think he thought it was a puncture, but it seemed like it was just no tire temperature or something.
Yeah, the Mercedes noted that he was basically getting understeer into right corners for some reason. I haven't heard yet what the actual problem was, but yeah, I mean, it's kind of just it's not fantastic when at that point at the first start of the race where Hamilton was streaking off into the distance and Bottas was just getting dropped behind the McLarens, whoever else was up there. So yeah, just a really poor race for Bottas, and you know, when something like that happened to Hamilton, these are the races he needs to be there clawing in at the points. I mean, whatever happened, and it's really, really unfortunate for him. He still outscored Hamilton, I think, but yeah, not by much, not to really impact the championship in any way.
Yeah, and one of the championship contenders, you have to say, in terms of the standings, Max Verstappen also did not have a great race. Firstly, the pace just was not there with the Red Bull car. And secondly, they had to retire. I think it was a temperature issue on the power unit where he had basically to lift and coast like so much, and then the temperature just was so high. Bad weekend also for Alexander Albon. And yeah, of course, now all the stories are coming up again. Will Red Bull switch around Gasly and Albon? But I'm 99% sure that, well, it's dangerous to say that in with Red Bull, but I'm pretty sure they will keep Alex Albon until the end of the season at least.
Yeah, I mean, in Italy, or at Monza, he picked up damage, probably his own fault, to be honest, when battling Grosjean, and that was costing him a lot of lap time, and the race is pretty much ruined from there, and he got a penalty for that as well. So not a great race. It does seem, though, I mean, Horner has said that Gasly's AlphaTauri, it's a much easier car to drive than the Red Bull, which kind of makes sense as to why Gasly is perhaps doing so well. And you've got to wonder if the Red Bull car is really, really, set up to suit Verstappen, and is that why Gasly struggles so much? Is that why Albon is struggling so much? It raises a lot of questions, and I don't see any switch happening soon, not this year anyway. I don't think. There's a little point really. But again, like you said, who knows with Red Bull? It could happen at any point, I guess, but I don't see, I'd be very surprised if it did happen.
Yeah, me too. And I guess it's a combination of maybe the car being set up to Max Verstappen's driving style, but also just plain simple of difficult car to drive, because when you watch the onboard videos, when Albon's onboard, but also Verstappen's onboard, it seems like at one corner the car is kind of understeery, next corner he turns in and the rear goes. It's like the car is so unbalanced and unpredictable, and maybe Verstappen has a driving style that's more suited to a car that's a little bit unpredictable, and maybe Albon is more, he has to rely more on what the car is doing consistently every lap. But I think from the outside it's very difficult to judge, and you can just hope that they can fix some of their issues, and we can have, as you said, I think the championship, it's not over until it's over, but it's already going into a certain direction, but you can just hope that Red Bull can fix their issues and that we have some interesting races in the next coming month. Yeah, as I said at the beginning, our podcast era is ending, but also we had an era ending in Formula One this weekend with Claire Williams stepping down as the deputy team principal, and I think also Frank Williams stepping down. So the Williams family leaving the Williams F1 team. I think the reason behind it was that with not owning the team, they really can't see them putting 110% in, and that's why they decided to leave it. But yeah, that's actually really an end of an era, right?
Yeah, you know, much like us, it's onto new projects, I guess, for them. Yeah, I mean, Frank Williams, one of the most successful team owners of all time, and his name will go down in F1 history. If you look at all the constructor records, Williams are pretty much at the top of, or near the top of a lot of those, you know, alongside the likes of Ferrari, now I guess Mercedes, Lotus, you know, all these really classic, well-known F1 constructors. And the last couple of years have been tough for them, very tough, but hopefully with this new investment, this new ownership, this new structure for the team, maybe, and of course with the new regulations and everything coming in, hopefully they can get back on track and back up to the top of the leaderboards with some competition. That's the main thing. But sad to see the Williams family, I guess, disappear from the grid. But for now, the Williams name as a team is staying there. But yeah, it probably won't be quite the same, knowing that the actual family has little to do with the on track activities. But wish them all the best in their next projects. And I'm sure they are just as hopeful as we are to see the team back towards the front of the grid.
Yep, absolutely. We wish them all the best. So, another great race, as we had a lot of good races in the last 4 years. What were your favorite moments of the last 4 years of our podcast, Fogo?
I guess at a lot of points it just, became a proper routine, a weekly routine. I think the weekly routine was only really ever interrupted by the coronavirus, when we backed off a little bit because there was not really that much to talk about. I think there was a couple of episodes that I missed where, when I was, in a place with bad connection or something. Not many missed on my side. But it's crazy to think that 4 years ago, I hadn't even started I had only just finished school. I hadn't even started college yet, and I just jumped. We both jumped right into it. Of course, our biggest standout episode is probably the Lando Norris episode. When we got him on prior to his Formula 3 season.
That was good.
And I guess, a lot of the bloopers that happen at the start of recordings that a lot of the listeners that they don't hear, but they happened a lot. It's been a long time, but I guess all things must come to an end at some point. But it's been a lot of fun. I've really enjoyed it.
Yeah, me too. I enjoyed it a lot. And also, most of the time after we recorded an episode, we still went on and talked like half an hour about Formula 1, IndyCar or Formula 2, other racing series, the Formula 1 games. So yeah, it was always fun talking about Formula 1, talking about it with you. And yeah, as you said, the Lando Norris episode obviously was a standout episode. But also, I have to say, I really enjoyed the end of the year episodes where we talked about the best liveries, best race. And it was always a good time and a good moment to reflect on the year. And I always had fun doing that as well.
Yeah, absolutely. It very much was. Which, leads me to a question then, which do you think was the best race that happened during our 4 years of podcasting?
Wow, that's a difficult question. So we had 16, 17, 18, 19, and 20. It wasn't this year, that's for sure. Well, looking back, the Brazil 2016 GP obviously comes to mind. A wet race with Verstappen nearly putting the car in the wall and overtaking people left, right, and center. Obviously, we had the 2019 Hockenheim GP. That's really difficult to decide. Obviously, this year the Italian GP was good, but I wouldn't pick it as the best race. I guess I would pick the 2019 Hockenheim GP because there was so much happening. I think wasn't it the race where we had one car on wet tires while the other car was on slicks, and yeah, it was just such a crazy race. Yeah, I really enjoy that. What about you?
I agree. I would also say the 2019 German Grand Prix. Brazil 2016 was great. Baku 2017, of course. There was definitely a lot of great Grand Prix that occurred during that time. And hopefully going forward, there'll be plenty more. We won't be here discussing them, but we'll be definitely watching and definitely enjoying Formula One as a whole. So yeah, it's been really great.
Yeah, and there are so many interesting stories yet to be written. Obviously, with Mick Schumacher now being, I think he's second or third in the F2 championship. Will he get a seat in Formula One next year? Obviously, what will happen 2022 with the new Formula One regulations? There's a lot to be talked about, a lot to be written about, and I think you're now in a prime position to do that, to write about that Motorsport Week, right?
Yeah. As you know, pretty much around the time we started doing the podcast was when I started my writing, I think without glorifying myself too much, I think naturally I've improved as I've went along with more experience. I've gained an education in that area with my degree in sports journalism, and hopefully from here it just keeps going. It's been a good journey so far, so hopefully you'll catch me still writing about it going forward, because that's definitely my plan to keep doing that.
Yep, I definitely will. I will check the website and see what articles you will come up with. So right, this time it's not a goodbye, and until next week, as it was so many times before, it's a goodbye and the end of the podcast. We both really enjoyed talking about all the latest F1 news, and we hope, obviously, that you enjoyed listening to it as well. So one last time, it's goodbye, and enjoy the rest of the Formula One 2020 season.